Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm joined by co-hosts Mia and Frank. Today's episode is sponsored by the ICS Sports Medicine Club. The Sports Medicine Club provides events, knowledge, and engaging experiences that unite those who are interested in the topic of sports medicine and sports and are looking to improve their performance and stay active and healthy. Members of the club help with the annual Red Cross blood donation drive, as well as participate in and host other related events in the form of seminars or job shadowing. So thank you to Toya and all club participants for helping to sponsor this episode. All right, moving on. In today's episode, we'll talk with two teachers, both of whom teach very focused and specific subjects. Mr. Paul will be in our first segment and will be discussing cell structure and other biology-related things. Then we'll welcome Mr. Jeremy for our second segment, in which we'll find out what parametric equations are, along with other calculus-related stuff. Why are these important? Well, stick around and find out how these things relate to everyday life. But before we jump into biology, let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from Albert Einstein, the man himself. He's quoted to have said, "Pure mathematics is, in its way, the poetry of logical ideas. Numbers, you know, are in a way a language. The more you study them, the deeper you understand. Different types of math, such as calculus and algebra, are different dialects. This highlights the creativity and aesthetic nature of mathematics. It also suggests math has an inherent beauty in its form of abstract ideas and how numbers are arranged." Einstein claims that mathematics is built on logic, like poetry, but also requires creativity and thought. And that's our quote of the day. Now on to some headline news with Mia.
Thank you for our quote of the day, Frank. Now, here's some headline news from around the world related to the topics of biology and math. Our first headline comes from sciencedaily.com. Scientists have found that cancer cells may use lipids to hide from the immune system. So cancer cells are cells that don't mature into cells with specific jobs. Usually, while the cells are still in control, white blood cells kill them to stop them from uncontrollably reproducing. Now, scientists at Rockefeller University have discovered that cancer cells, in order to not get killed and to multiply, are using lipids, or in other words, fat, to hide. While it is a bad discovery for us, we do have ways to treat cancer, and this might lead us to develop a way to treat patients better and ultimately cure cancer easily. Our next headline comes from quantummagazine.org. Athletes can now utilize mathematics to gain an upper hand in their respective sports now. The technology of analyzing athletes' acceleration data and creating digital twins of athletes has helped even Olympic swimmers like Andrew Wilson win national championships and Olympic gold medals. This shows that sports is not only about how skilled you are in the game, but also how data-driven analysis and understanding of the mathematics behind the sport can greatly improve performance and ultimately help athletes succeed at the highest levels of their respective sports. And finally, our last headline comes from news/medical.net. As microplastics in polluted environments find their way into our vital organs like our liver, lungs, and intestines, scientists have now discovered that they have found a way into sections of our brains. So, from autopsies conducted from 2023 to 2024, it is concluded that 8 of the 15 individuals experimented on with consent have died of vein blockage of the brain from microplastics, and scientists are now starting to find a way to stop this from being a very serious issue in the near future. And that's our headline news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote in the headline news. Ever wonder what a cell is made of? Or why is having some general knowledge about biology important? Well, Mr. Paul's here in the studio to tell us why. I'll hand over the mic to Mia to kick off this first segment.
Hello, Mr. Paul, and welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
All right.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. That's great to hear. All right. So to get us started, could you please introduce yourself and let us know what you do here at ICS?
All right. My name is Paul, but most students will call me Mr. Paul. I teach biology, general biology, and AP biology.
All right. Thank you. Now, I've got a follow-up question. What inspired you to get into biology in the first place?
Okay, so this question, or rather I'd say my answer to this question, I'm not sure I want Miss Amber to hear the answer to this question.
Why not?
So can you promise me Miss Amber won't listen to this podcast? It's okay. So when I was in high school, I switched schools several times.
Yeah.
And particularly the change between 9th and 10th grade. Somehow I should have taken biology and I missed it and the school never caught it. I graduated from high school. I never took AP biology and I never even took general biology. So who would have thought I'd be teaching biology now? Well, in the years after that, I was into university. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to study. I kind of thought maybe finance or like that whole world of investment seemed interesting for a while. But I had thought I should just take a biology class. I was living in my home state of Minnesota. So at the University of Minnesota, I signed up for a biology class and had a great professor. I think it was just kind of the right time of my life, and I realized like biology at the time for me was kind of bringing up big questions that seemed really important, like where did I come from? Where did we as humans come from? Like, is there a God? Like, it doesn't answer those questions directly, but like it touches on them. And so it was something that I just was like, I want to take another of these classes and then another and another. And before I knew it, I was graduating with a biology degree.
That is an interesting way on how you came to teach biology. But yeah, so we know that cell structure is something that is taught in biology. Mm-hmm. So could you give us like a quick overview of like what a cell structure is?
All right. So I guess like, the question asking what is a cell structure is kind of like asking the question, what is a car part, right? So we could go through parts of a car from bolts to seats to steering wheels to radiators. And I would say the same thing with cell. Everybody knows about the mitochondria and the nucleus. And I think of the cell structures themselves as being not super interesting to just talk about cell structures. But it's, you have to understand the structures in order to discuss functions. And in the door of a car, you have a motor that moves a window up and down. And I suppose when that first came out, that was a pretty amazing thing. Well, when you look into the cell and you see that there are structures that are motors, that are moving things around at such a small scale, I feel like the structure leading to an understanding of the function gets me to this point of like, wow, that's super amazing. So.
All right, thank you. That brings back a lot of memories from my 10th grade biology class, but except it's with Mr. Darrell, not you, so I'm sorry.
Sad, I missed out on half.
All right, now for my next question, what are some other key areas of biology that you teach?
When we teach biology, we have this approach where we're looking at biology as like from a systems perspective. So kind of like the car example in the last question you asked, where we can look at the whole ecosystem, right? How parts within that ecosystem work together. And so we look at the parts and we look at their function and how it works together. We could bring it down to the level of an organism. and talk about organ systems and how organs function together to allow for a human to be alive. And then probably the area we focus most on, though, is the cell, both in general biology and AP biology. And we're looking at the cell, again, as a system of parts. And the reason that we focus most on the cell is because this is the fundamental, like, level where life is possible. And we can look at all of the diseases and disorders in our bodies really can be traced back to the level of the cell. So that's maybe how we look at biology. And it doesn't describe everything we teach in biology, but a big picture view.
Yeah, I think that's a great take on it. I'm actually taking biology right now. So, yeah.
Oh, nice.
But I'm understanding half of what you're saying.
Maybe I should be asking you questions.
Maybe you should be asking me a question, but yeah. So, yeah. Why do you believe that it's important for people to study biology, especially when it comes to understanding the world around us?
All right. Well, that I feel like is a very big question that I could talk about for a long time. I think of the ICS mission statement, which has the phrase, like, it's talking about what we're trying to produce in our students, and this idea of to know and apply wisdom for the good of our world and the glory of God. So, like at a basic level, in taking biology, it would be the same for any subject, right? Like having a basic knowledge level of a certain field is important just for being a, you know, well-functioning human in society. So if, like an example, I saw just yesterday, a person I know, social media, posted this thing about bees and honey, and it was saying things like, if you put honey on a metal spoon, the live enzymes will immediately die, and something about honey having this special energy that's just perfectly suited for the brain. And if you study biology, you'll know that an enzyme is a protein, and it's not alive when it's in when it's outside of a cell, and that it I guess in a way, it just helps you to analyze a claim like that, which we see lots of that kind of stuff on the internet. And just to be able to kind of not get swept away by like bigger things promising bigger than they really are, or conspiracy theories, right? Like having a basic knowledge of biology is helpful for that. The second level is the application level, and this is the kind of the phrase for the good of our world. And then I'm thinking of like whether it's studying ecology, which, as you know, we're studying right now. And a lot of times when we're talking about ecology, we're looking at things that if we understand how these systems work, then when there's an issue like climate change, you know, increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, you know, some might say that, like, I've heard a claim that if there's more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the ocean will just absorb it. Well, we just in biology looked at how increased carbon dioxide will result in more acidic ocean, and that will, as a result, decrease the growth rate of corals. And so you can just kind of understand how things work, and then once you understand how things work at that system level, then you can look at what needs to be done to correct it, right? With humility, of course, because all of these systems are very complex. So that would be the application level. And then, like, I think the biggest one for me is, like, and what really drew me and continues to draw me into biology is the sense of wonder. As, like, when I look at these mechanisms at the cellular level, again, it's, like, so amazing the complexity of all these machineries and communication systems. And I just saw an interview with the famous American scientist Francis Collins, who is the head of the Human Genome Project, just wrote a book, and he made a statement saying, like, in his work in biology and in the lab, he said, like, the laboratory really became a cathedral to him in his path to God. Like, as you're understanding the intricacies of how DNA works and how the cell works again, it's like you're seeing the fingerprints of God in the lab or in your studies. So I feel like that is kind of what keeps me excited as I go back into studying complex things in biology.
All right, for sure. And I think at the start where you mentioned the ICS mission, mm-hmm. I think that as students, at least, I think we overlook that mission a lot of times, even though it's in mm-hmm. every classroom we walk into. Because I think we're all thinking one thing, and it's that I have to get into this university. Mm. How is your class going to look on my transcripts mm-hmm. and such? And so thank you for reminding us of, you know, just the end goal yeah. of ICS's mission.
Yeah.
All right, for our next question, could you share an example or two of how a basic understanding of biology can help us make better choices about health, the environment, or even the products we use?
All right. So here I kind of touched on the environment already. And I think, again, it's that understanding that for the environment, it is a complex system of interacting parts. And so if we're trying to manage, let's say, a national park and looking at populations of predators and prey, and for some reason the ecosystem is out of balance because of often it's like climate change is one reason, but there could be disease, other things that result in imbalance. If we don't understand these, like the effect of how these animals or plants interact with each other and how energy flows through an ecosystem, then we have very, 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 very little chance of like applying effective measures to preserve the biodiversity of that ecosystem and our world in general, right? So really we're starting in general biology to just describe these complex systems. And for us as humans, for us like humanity to steward well the earth and its resources, it's going to require some ICS students to like keep on going with their studies and understand these things really, really well so that we can make good choices in how we steward.
All right, so now moving on to the final question. In what ways do you think studying biology can shape our perspective on issues like sustainability, food production, or medical advancements?
Okay, so a little bit of a similar question here, but maybe this time I'll pick medicine. In AP biology, we get a little bit deeper into like the mechanisms of the cell. And just last week, we were looking at something called cell transport, how cells move materials in and out of them using pumps and channels and other proteins. But so an example of that was, how is it that our intestines, as food travels through our intestines, how is it that we absorb glucose from our food? So sorry, if you didn't really want a biology class, you should ask somebody else to come. But I'll get to like the motivation here in the end, right? But I got to kind of just describe, like, so I won't describe all the mechanisms, but like it takes a very complex set of multiple different types of protein to keep different concentration gradients and in order to move glucose from the intestines into our intestinal tissues and then from there into our blood. And so we talked about that as an example of what we're required to understand for the AP curriculum. And then after that, I showed them an example of, for instance, the disease cholera, which is a more of a third world disease. It's very easily treatable, but like hundreds of thousands of people still die every year because of this disease. So here, like, for the good of our world, right? So the cholera is a bacteria that gets into our digestive system by usually drinking contaminated water. And so if we're going to be able to treat a disease that kills now 100,000 people a year, but if we didn't know how to treat it, it would be killing maybe millions of people a year. So to understand, like, so cholera gets into our intestines, it releases this toxin goes into those same cells that absorb glucose. By a series of changes, it causes water to leak out of those cells into the intestines. And the result is what none of us want to have, just horrible diarrhea, right? And so water is just flowing through the intestines. Well, that results in glucose being washed through and sodium ions being washed out. And this system of pumping glucose into the cells requires those. And so in order to understand how to treat it, well, the way we treat it is with just like oral rehydration salts, which a lot of us have gotten when we've been sick, right? A doctor will send those, you mix it, stir it up, drink it. And all it is just sugar and salt. And it just happens to be that those two substances are exactly what are lacking in our intestines because of the diarrhea. And so we can't pull glucose in if we don't have both sugar and salt. So who would have known how to design this treatment if they didn't understand the whole system of how your cells take in glucose and what the cholera toxin does? And these packets are like, you know, 15 baht. They're very cheap and they're very easy to distribute in places where cholera is affecting people. And they can take the death rate of cholera from up to 50% down to less than 1%. So it just was something very simple. But again, the point is it requires an understanding of the biology before you can come up with the treatment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paul. I actually hope I don't get that disease anytime soon. So, yeah.
But if you do, it's very treatable.
Still, though, I would not.
I hope you don't, too.
All right. So I actually have one more question for you. We like to end our guest segments by asking them for some advice. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Paul, what advice would you give to students who are interested in the medical field?
Okay. Well, so if a student is in ICS currently, a good path toward medicine certainly would be taking biology, then AP biology, and anatomy and physiology, and definitely a good amount of chemistry and physics too, but probably chemistry and as many chemistry and as many biology classes as you can would be recommended. And then going on from there, I think a lot of ICS students are interested in the medical field. I think I would say, you know, maybe there's students that feel like the medical field would be interesting just because I think it's a great direction because, again, it's the good of our world. It's a way to earn a living by, like, alleviating human suffering, right? So I would say don't pursue a medical career because you want to, like, have the prestige of saying you're a doctor, right? Like, pursue the medical field because you care about human suffering and you want to help humans.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paul. I only took, like, the basics, so, like, biology, chemistry, not mm-hmm. physics, mm-hmm. anything but physics, because I'm not going into biology. I'm going into law, but I think that our talk today, it was very insightful. And I think from someone who's not going into medicine, I feel like I now kind of understand, like, why people choose it, because there are some people that, you know, do doctor for that prestige. But yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Paul.
You are welcome. Glad to be here.
All right. And thank you, Mr. Paul. And that concludes our first segment We'll be right back after this short PSA announcement from Mr. Paul.
Every day, millions of cells in your body are working tirelessly to keep you alive and well. But did you know that the choices you make can either help or hinder their efforts? Your cells depend on you to provide the right nutrients, enough sleep, and regular exercise. When you eat healthy foods, you're fueling your cells with the energy they need to function. When you stay active, you're helping them stay strong and resilient. And when you get enough rest, you're giving them the time they need to repair and regenerate. But it's not just about what you do, it's about what you avoid too. Bad habits, substance abuse, and poor diet choices can damage your cells, leading to long-term health problems. By living a healthy lifestyle, you're not just taking care of your body, you're supporting the very building blocks of life itself. Remember, healthy cells mean a healthy you. Make the right choices today because your cells are counting on you.
Thank you, Mr. Paul, for helping us with our PSA for this episode. And welcome back to our second segment. For this segment, we welcome Mr. Jeremy to the studio. Have you ever wondered what a parametric equation is or how it's used? Well, I can't tell you, but Mr. Jeremy can. So, Mia, go ahead and get us started with our first question.
Hello, Mr. Jeremy. Welcome to the show and to the studio. Very excited to have you in here. All right, to get us started, could you please introduce yourself and let us know what you do here at ICS?
Yeah, I'm Mr. Jeremy, and I'm the high school calculus teacher. I also teach pre-calculus, and I've been here for about 18 years.
That's impressive, 18 years. Now, I've got a follow-up question, actually. So what inspired you to get into teaching math and specifically calculus?
Yeah, that's a great question. I hope I don't ramble on too long. The first story would start back when I was in high school and I was thinking about what kind of career I wanted to get into. And I think we had an engineer or something come to our classroom and share with our math class. And I was pretty good at math already. And as they were sharing, it sounded like, oh, they make a good amount of money. And I was talking to my mom about it. And she said, well, Jeremy, don't just think about money. Like, is this really what you want to do? Like, think about what this job entails. Like, are you going to be sitting in a cubicle working, or, you know, what does it mean? And as I thought about it, I realized that I really wanted to be more in an area of service, working with people. I really love the academic environment. And so I decided I wanted to be a teacher. Now, I just loved all of school, like, really. So I was thinking, oh, it could be social studies, science, math, art. You know, I love these things. And so when I was thinking about pursuing education, it was really, I was still pretty open to that. Then when I was doing my college, going to university to take the placement exams and choose my or declare my major, I went in to take a math test, and I was late getting there because of a flat tire. They let me stay anyway because I was an honor student. They said, okay, well, you don't have to come back. It's a long drive for you. And I'm taking this math placement exam, and it's just so long, and I couldn't figure out why. It just kept getting harder and so long. I come out of the exam, I said, that was a really long exam. And the advisor, she was just tapping her pencil. She was like, yeah, it's an adaptive exam. And I'd never heard of this before, but it was using it's like early AI, I guess, where it was like, if you do well, it gives you harder questions to see how far you can get. So she asked me what major I wanted to do. I said, well, I want to do education, and I'm not sure which subject. She said, you're doing math. And because she had to sit and wait through all of that, I did well in math. And it really makes sense, because if you can teach math or science, like, that's where the jobs are. Yeah. And as far as calculus specifically, then when I came, before I taught at ICS, I was teaching at a bilingual school. The students there, it was a math-focused program. And their curriculum was very cyclical, but it was getting to be too easy for them. And they asked me, the students asked me, could we just learn calculus next semester? So these were probably grade 11 students at the time, I think. Maybe they were grade 12. But so that second semester, I said, well, yeah, I guess it's been a while since I've been in school, and I kind of had to try to relearn it. And so I started relearning it. And it was about the same time that I started teaching, that I applied to work at ICS. There was an opening, like the previous calculus teacher was leaving. And so it just made sense. And as the years went by, ICS had more and more students. We went from two math teachers to now we have about five high school math teachers. And so now, rather than teaching pretty much every subject in math, I'm focused on calculus.
I think that's actually a really interesting way of how you came to this career. Now, I've also got this question. Could you give us like a quick overview of like what a parametric equation is?
Okay, parametric equation. I love that you asked this in a radio format, because normally I'd be waving my hands and pointing at things and drawing pictures. So this is the way we're going to do this. We're going to say, just, you know, close your eyes and imagine looking up at the ceiling. And up at the ceiling, you have a nice big square or rectangle or something. And if you look along one wall, you could think about that as going left and right, or maybe north and south, okay? And then you look the other way, and that's like going east and west. So if you've been in a math class, you've learned about the x-coordinate and the y-coordinates, and you know that you can go left and right for x, and you can go up and down for y. But now imagine that there's a bug up on the ceiling and it's walking around, okay? Now you can track its position by looking at different places where it is as it's walking around on the ceiling. But if you just draw a picture tracing where you went, what you end up with is some kind of, you know, random thing, but you don't know when it was at those different places. So what a parametric equation does is, even though your graph is x and y, so it's left and right, it's up and down, but now we're adding a time to it. If I just look at the picture, if I traced out where that bug was walking, I would just see where it walked and I wouldn't know when. So what the parametric equation does, it tells you x based on time. So it only tells you left and right based on time. Then it looks at the y, and it only tells you that y based on time. So it tells you the up and down based on time. And you put those two things together, now you can track where that is. And you can kind of think about a machine like this. This applies to any kind of machine like a 3D printer or something like that. You've got this thing, it wants to move back and forth one way and up and down the other way. And so it's able to map out where everything goes. That's parametric equations. Well, then you add, you've got a whole room, a 3D space. So now we can add a Z axis to that as well. You can add other, as many variables as you need to that, and they're all based on time.
All right. Thank you for that. I'm getting a lot of flashbacks in pre-calculus. All right. Now, other than the parametric equation, what are other key areas of calculus that you teach?
Okay, so the biggest idea, the most important thing in calculus is the derivative. And the derivative is about rates of change. It's an instantaneous rate of change. So everything about rates of change, anything you can think of where you can think, I can put this in a rate, miles per hour, meters per second, people per square kilometer, anything that you can think of as a rate, calculus will apply to that. And I know you just said you're having flashbacks to pre-calculus. One of the challenges with pre-calculus is that you're always jumping from topic to topic because there's so many things that you need to do. But with calculus, you like jump into this thing called the derivative. It's about rates of change, and you just keep developing that idea and going deeper with it, working backwards with it, and it's always founded around the rate of change.
So yeah, I actually never took calculus before. I was just like nodding my head, pretending, yeah, I understand that. But yeah, so why do you think that calculus is important for students to learn, even if they don't plan to pursue a career in math or engineering?
Okay, so one way to answer that is, we would be surprised at how many different disciplines are going to use calculus, even though it might not necessarily directly seem like it does. So you might, like anything, like I just said, anything involving rates of change could be about calculus. So if I think about something like business, if you go to business school, you have to learn calculus because you might be thinking about how your profits, how your rates of return and things like that. So there's rates involved, it might apply. So finance, rates of interest, things like that. It would apply to medicine, because if you're thinking about dosages of medicine and how that's going to be diluted in your bloodstream as it goes on and keeping those things up, that's going to involve calculus because, it's about rates of change and things. Computer science, it's big because this is how we're developing things like AI technology and stuff. It's founded in the mathematics. But even above, like just thinking about careers, just when you learn to challenge yourself and think mathematically and have more tools, it teaches you kind of a new way to think. It opens you up to harder stuff and just to be able to solve new kinds of problems and how we approach problems, even if we're not necessarily using those calculus concepts. It's teaching us new and stretching our brains to just deal with different things.
All right, thank you for that. And since calculus is mainly learned inside of classrooms or let's say, a lecture hall. Now, outside the classroom, could you give us some examples of how calculus is used in real life situations?
Okay, I love this question because you said real life. And I've never used calculus at the grocery store or while driving through traffic. It is a specialized thing. Like we're getting into some really difficult mathematics, and it's aimed at things like sending people to the moon. You know, like it was developed as a way of tracking planets and understanding celestial motion. Like these are big, lofty concepts. The cool thing was, as they developed these ideas about calculus and saw how they related to physics, they also started to see, like I mentioned, these business or medicine kind of applications where it just went in so many different directions. And so will you use it in everyday life? Probably not. I use it because I'm a calculus teacher, and that's the only place I use it. But I do know that my students are going to walk away and they're going to pursue careers where they might have to use it in unexpected ways.
I think that's a great take on it. And, you know, like, sure, it might not be used every day, but you won't know until the day you might actually use it one day. So I've got another one. So what role does calculus play in modern technology, and how can students appreciate the impact of calculus in the digital age?
Yeah, it's a great question. Because even if you don't use calculus, we should understand that it does underlie most of the technology that we use. Anything, robotics, AI, we just take this stuff for granted and we don't think about how it works. I don't want to know sometimes, you know, so you just... It's too much, you know, it's enough to figure out how to use it, but to really appreciate what's going into it, that's some really deep stuff. So there's things like image processing, you know, or AI generation, you know, these things are using calculus to do that, predicting stock market trends, analyzing network traffic on your computers, like to figure out how to allocate resources. So really anything that is about efficiency or change, that's where calculus is coming into play.
All right. Typically, we would like to ask our guests for advice. So, Mr. Jeremy, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about studying math beyond high school?
One of the things, or the first thing that comes to mind, is just the way that we as students often view math as being like, okay, here's a problem, solve that, here's a problem, and here's a technique to solve it. We learn all these little algorithms or all these little tricks, and we get a problem set of problems that are identical to that. And it is important to do that because we're building skills when we do that kind of thing. But that's not the way that mathematics is applied in the real world, because if it was, we could just let our computer do that. We say, oh, here's this kind of problem, do that for me. Here's this problem, like AI could take that over. But the way mathematicians are actually working in the real world is they're presented with a problem that does not look like anything that you've seen in a textbook before. And they have to go back to all those tools that they learned as younger people and just, okay, what tools do I have? And there might be 100 ways to solve that problem or approach that problem. Some might be more efficient than others. Some might give conflicting answers, and they have to be able to resolve that kind of stuff. So my advice to you as you study that is to try to think about application and understanding the concepts that are underlying. Just being proficient in solving problems and getting 100% on your tests, that's not really what you do. Like, yeah, that's good, and that probably shows that you have some understanding of mathematics, but you have to go deeper and ask the deeper questions, like, why does this work? Why am I using this instead of this? Or, hey, could I do this instead? And maybe the answer is yes. Maybe I'm just teaching it this way because I have a room of 20 students that I have to find the best way to get to a goal, right? And so focusing on that, viewing math as a problems, like I guess a box full of tools, and we're finding the right tools to apply to the situation, we might have a lot of ways to approach it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jeremy. And that concludes our second segment with Mr. Jeremy and everything you wanted to know about calculus and how it's relevant to our everyday lives. As we end this episode, we want to thank Mr. Paul and Mr. Jeremy again for coming on the show and helping us understand why biology and calculus are relevant to our everyday lives. Stay tuned for our next episode as we host special guest Miss B. Chanita, a well-known local artist whose works have garnered both domestic and international recognition. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.